Dr. Willie Parker is a Christian reproductive justice advocate who travels as an abortion provider in Alabama and Georgia. His most recent work is focused on violence against women, sexual assault, and reproductive rights and justice through advocacy and provisions of contraceptive and abortion services. Dr. Parker will be speaking at the Women's Leadership Circle Luncheon for Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood tomorrow from 11:30 to 1:30 at Wolfert's Roost Country Club in Albany. In his new book, Life's Work, A Moral Argument for Choice, Parker pulls from his personal and professional journeys as well as the scientific training he received as a doctor to reveal how he came to believe unequivocally that helping women in need without judgment is precisely the Christian thing to do. We welcome Dr. Willie Parker to the roundtable this morning. Dr. Parker, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What brought you to take a look at this life's work and ultimately to discuss it in this fashion?
Well, I'm trained as a women's health provider, board certified in obstetrics and gynecology, and thought to be a comprehensive women's health provider. And the only aspect of women's health care that I had any reservation about was abortion care. I didn't have that reservation because I was taught that abortion was wrong, but I was increasingly being faced with people saying that abortion is murder. Increasingly, as that important care became stigmatized, 1 in 4 women will need an abortion in this country by the time they're age 45. It's one of the most common procedures that's done, more common gynecologic need of women, and yet people have politicized it to the point that there's limited access to it. So I was never morally opposed, but I was unclear about what it meant to me morally and ethically as a Christian to provide the care. So I decided to take a closer look at my own values and do a values clarification because increasingly I had patients who asked me to help them to end unplanned or unwanted pregnancies or wanted but legally flawed ones. And the one thing that had not been done with regard to looking at abortion was the moral context of it with regard to Christianity.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. You mentioned you grew up in the Deep South. You lived in a very Christian household. You converted to an even more fundamentalist form of Christianity as a young man. It was ultimately an interpretation of the Good Samaritan that was in a sermon by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that changed you. Give us a sense of what it was about that interpretation.
Sure. I was on faculty at the University of Hawaii at the time and was responsible for the care of women in a clinic that largely cared for indigent women. And Hawaii was a state where abortion was really a non-issue with regard to provision because since 1970 it had been legal there and that care had been integrated into the other parts. And I was under the administration of a new clinic administrator who decided, because of his religious belief and understanding as a Christian, that abortions were inconsistent with the values of the clinic. And he unilaterally prevented us from providing that care. I challenged that through the highest levels of administration and was ultimately told that it was his prerogative to do that. And so while contemplating what my next steps should be, I had gone home and was listening to Dr. King's last sermon, the Mountaintop Sermon. And in that sermon, he uses the story of the Good Samaritan, and he describes what made the Good Samaritan good in terms of that Samaritan character stopping to help a fallen traveler when everyone else passed the person by and was afraid to help because of what might happen to them. Dr. King said that what made the Samaritan good was his ability to reverse the question of concern and to ask what will happen to this person if I don't stop to help him. And I saw myself in that story, particularly with regard to what happens to women when abortion care is not available. And we know that when abortion is illegal and inaccessible, it doesn't stop women from attempting to end pregnancies that they don't want, but it does increase their risk and their peril. And so I decided it became clear that the moral imperative found in the Good Samaritan narrative of being concerned about your fellow human being, and that the most essential definition of religion is the degree to which it prompts you to act compassionately on behalf of others. I became clear that abortion or women needing that care was not outside of the confines of compassionate action. For those of us who claim a Christian identity, but more importantly, as important health care, compassionate action demands that we provide that for women.
This is difficult for me to figure out, so let me ask you. When, as we're listening to the debate right now over our over the next Supreme Court justice, obviously the issue of choice is paramount and is being asked and questioned in this case. There is a great push by what is often referred to as the Christian right, evangelicals, that want this and feel that it is imperative that a justice be placed on the Supreme Court who will fight a woman's right to an abortion. And yet, we are also seeing a climate this week where that very potential justice is being questioned about other acts in his life that would seem to be, on the face of it, non-Christian, much less illegal. My question is, how is that rectified within Christianity, and ultimately, how do we all make sense of it?
Well, that's a large task, and I think it would be, as tempted as I might be to field that question, I think the peril lies in having one person speak for the whole of Christianity, a tradition that's very diverse, and expressions of Christianity. There are many people who claim that identity and who have different understandings of it. And I want to acknowledge that because I recognize the fallacy in thinking that my way of thinking about Christianity is the only legitimate way, because that is the logic that is employed often by people who declare my identity as a Christian is illegitimate simply because I provide abortion care. But I will embrace the premise of your question is how do we reconcile mutually exclusive positions of integrity and morality and justice, particularly with regard to gender? And so how is it that the people who are the biggest champions of the person who's currently being nominated for Supreme Court, and their imperative is related to the morality and the sanctity of life and respect for the health of women and what they would call the unborn, while at the same time rationalizing and justifying the behavior of someone who would receive a lifetime appointment, and his behaviors have been disrespectful, his alleged behaviors are rooted in a blatant disrespect and disregard for women, and at the same time, rooted in the premise that his values are the main thing that make him qualified to be on the court. So I think therein lies the rub. It has to be, and it goes to the notion of, religion and personal values are great if they help you to reach a point of integrity that would be mindful of human rights and reflective of the fact that we should all stand equal in our responsibility with regard to our behaviors. But when it comes to policy that will govern the lives of people who may not even share your religious beliefs, the justice and fairness that's rooted in a universal understanding of law and humanity that can have various religious expressions say that we cannot be using as our most essential metric someone's religious identity to either rule them in to office or to rule them out. There should be no religious test for the highest offices of the land. And so it would say that we should, just as there's an effort to put aside the religious significance of this person's behavior, there should be an effort to put aside the religious significance of his desire to rule from the bench based on his religious beliefs that will compromise the health and lives of people who don't share those beliefs.
As a doctor and as a doctor who performs this medical procedure, it I assume in your eyes should not be a political act. It should not be a religious act. It should be one for the health and security of the woman who is having the abortion.
You understand me correctly, that is correct. We know that abortion as a procedure with a desired outcome of protecting the health and the life of the person who's carrying a pregnancy who requests that procedure, that is without question when we look at the scientific evidence. And when we look at the ethical requirement of medicine to do no harm and to respect autonomy and bodily integrity of people, there's no question that abortion should only be considered in the context of healthcare. And as such, when it comes to the conscience or the moral significance of abortion, that happens at the individual level. And the act of the ability to act conscientiously or to act from a place of conscience is what the intent of the Constitution is with regard to how people should have the freedom to act in that manner. So for me, abortion as a healthcare provider is a matter of evidence and science, and the policies and laws and rules should be based on that and that alone.
You've obviously thought long and hard about this, and it's been a part of your life's work. And as the book is titled, are there still gray areas for you?
There absolutely are gray areas, to the degree that they are gray areas, that is reflective that I am thoughtful and intentional and deliberate, and all of in how I practice medicine. The gray areas are, as technology makes things possible with regard to healthcare, we are technologically speaking figuring out how to do things long before we figure out whether or not to do things. And so the interface between medicine and culture and values means that I have to think about my craft in a way that reflects the evolution of our abilities. And at the same time, we have to look at these new possibilities in the context of what are our core and essential values. And those values should be rooted in human rights and human values. And when we do that, things like assisted reproductive technology, for example, we're on the verge of with cloning technology, you know, when and if we are ever able to clone a human being, that's a aspect of reproduction. To say how we should deal with that technology when it becomes possible means that I have to think about it in the context of what it means in terms of human values and in terms of personhood and personal autonomy. So yes, there are gray areas only because I think about it, but there are some things that are not gray. It's never a gray area for me about whether or not a woman or a person can become pregnant should be the key arbiter and the sole arbiter about whether or not to continue a pregnancy. So there, I acknowledge that there are gray areas when we have to think and contemplate, but we should not allow lack of clarity to be introduced when there doesn't need to be.
Dr. Willie Parker is the author of the book Life's Work, A Moral Argument for Choice. He will be speaking on Thursday, September 27th, that's this Thursday, from 11:30 to 1:30 at Wolfert's Roost Country Club as part of the Women's Leadership Circle Luncheon for Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. You can find out more information by going to uhpp.org, uhpp.org. Dr. Willie Parker, a great pleasure to have you on the program. We look forward to having you in the region, and I thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Again, you can find out more information by going to uhpp.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.